Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
It's Hoffman Show. What's up? What's happening on a Friday? On Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980 here in our Navy Yard studios. Anthony, on a Friday, is this weird for you?
I guess I'm getting used to it. I think the question should be for you, though. How weird does it feel to
It's definitely be weird. Here? Yeah, normally I work from home on Fridays. I've got a nice little studio set up at the house, and the bosses are nice enough to let me operate from home on Fridays. And I'm here today because after the show, I'll be headed to Audi Field for the Spirit and their matchup against Angel City tonight, 8 o'clock kickoff at Audi. Had a lovely chat with Esme Morgan earlier in the week about that. We had our WOSO show earlier today, although we spent a lot of time on Chicago fired their coach 6 games into the season. Anthony, and their roster stinks, and it's like, I think you guys fired the wrong guy. So we talked about that on that show today. But it definitely was weird leading up to, because I have kind of a Friday routine. I coach my fitness classes in the morning, and then at some point we do the WOSO show, and then I talk to Clinton for an interview that you'll hear at 5:30. I tape with Clinton typically on Fridays. It's better for his schedule. Although sometimes we don't tell anybody because you can't tell the difference when I'm at home because it's the same studio. If you're watching on YouTube and you see, wow, Craig seems to have teleported, and it becomes rather obvious. So I tape with Clinton, and then typically I have like an hour and a half to eat lunch, just hang out, enjoy the fact that I'm home, maybe relax a little bit, regather myself. And today I walked out my door and got on the train and came here. Very, very different experience on a Friday.
Yeah, a lot of moving, especially since you got to get down here after, you know, your hectic sort of kind of busy morning.
Yeah, sort of kind of. Also, there's a smaller group in my second class this morning, and so I worked out with them. Buddy, that was a hard one. That was a doozy of a workout, so we'll see how much gas I got left in the tank. I got enough to get through the show. Hopefully, I got enough to get through the game, and I'm not, like, falling asleep in my seat like a loser.
No, you won't.
No, I won't. Why? Too exciting of the action
exactly
in front of me. Let's go. Got to get back on the horse. Spirit, rough one last weekend. We're going to talk today, though, some Commanders on the field. We'll obviously talk about the RFK stuff. In fact, we got a very special edition of Not My Beat today. Instead of talking to someone who's on the beat, we're going to let you hear a bunch of clips from all the different interviews that have happened on our stations over the last couple of days. I actually just saw, I got a notification from the old Odyssey app, Anthony. Kevin Sheehan had Phil Mendelson on today, so we'll pull something, some clips from that. Mayor Bowser called in to Grant Danny. They've had a couple of other Congress or City Council folks on. So we'll let you hear kind of the state of play from the participants in the debate over the Commander's future and their ability to return to D.C. coming up at 5 o'clock. We will also talk a little bit about the NBA playoffs here in a moment, our weekend preview later on in the show. And then we're going to ask a question on the phones on the football side of it here in a few minutes. But Anthony, we started in the NBA last night where I'll put it this way. To win an NBA championship, you got to have a level of superstar that is far rarer than NBA teams want to admit. There's plenty of teams out there that think we have a guy, and they don't. They have a very good player who can lead them to 50-plus wins, maybe even. Certainly in the 40s. Winning record in the playoffs, the whole deal. And the bar to be one of the dudes who is the best player on a championship team is something that's even higher than that. And I don't know if Jalen Brunson is one of those dudes, but I'm starting to think he's like actually really close to it. And I don't think the Knicks are going to beat the Celtics. I don't think the Knicks are good enough to win a championship. That is not to say the New York Knicks are an excellent basketball team. But Jalen Brunson is a phrase that, like, I cannot say the words that I want to say to describe what Jalen Brunson is. I'm gonna say he's a bad man, and I mean that as a compliment. That dude is ridiculous. And the consistency with which he hits clutch shots, his ability to just consistently score buckets one-on-one is so incredibly rare. And is he as good as a Giannis or someone like that? No, because those guys are also two-way players, and Brunson's only giving you so much. Like, he's tough, and he tries on defense. But, at his size, like, there are limitations. Although his strength prevents you from, like, posting him up and that kind of stuff. But in the playoffs, eventually, many series get to a point where you just need a dude to make a shot. And all of the schematics and all of the everything go out the window because the defenses are too keyed up and locked in. The intensity's like too high. And the better bet than trying to run something is just to say, I'm going to put my guy against your guy in space and may the best man win. And the consistency with which the best man in those situations is Jalen Brunson is stupefying. And he just did it again last night. And now the Pistons, who for, I don't know, what, 48 minutes a game? Anthony, right? That's how long they play in the NBA?
Yep.
48 minutes. They played six games?
Yep.
That's 288 minutes in the series. I think the Pistons were the better team for like 240 of them or something like that. And they lost because in those other 48 minutes, I didn't do that math on purpose. It just worked out that way. But in those other 48 minutes, the key clutch time moments, Jalen Brunson was the best dude on the floor. And in the playoffs, that matters a lot.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think you said it perfectly. The Pistons down the stretch of that game, they gave the ball. They put the ball in their best player's hands. And two times, Cade Cunningham came up short. And you just had to know that... Game on the line, 20 seconds left to go in the game. Everybody knows the ball is going to be in Jalen Brunson's hands, and he delivers time and time again. And yesterday, the move he hit, we're not even talking about the shot. We're talking about the move he hits.
Floored Ausar Thompson.
Crossing him out of the frame. Like, there were so many different angles where he just gets crossed literally all the way out the frame. And then on the same day that Jalen Brunson wins Clutch Player of the Year, he delivers for his team and sends him to the second round against the Celtics. I don't even know what to say because the dude is like extremely good. I think he is a bit underrated. I don't think a lot of people put him in there like top five or top 10, you know, a player in the NBA, but he is a bad guy.
At this point, I would struggle to name 10 players better than him.
Yeah.
And again, is he one of the six, so to speak? I don't know. Like, in what world is Jalen Brunson, like, who's got to be on his team where Jalen Brunson is the best player on a championship team? That's hard for me.
Yeah, that is.
But he might be the next guy. Like, if that list is Luka, Tatum, Giannis, Jokic,
Ant,
I don't even know if Ant's on that list. Like, can I trust Anthony Edwards? He's definitely really close. Like, he's the guy that I would bet on to add, probably, of the young guns. But, like, yeah, I don't even know if he's on that list. Wemby might be on
that
list.
Oh, we're missing Shea.
Shea, like, I think obviously we'll see about Shea this
year. Yeah, we will. The jury's still out.
The jury's still out, but, like, I mean, the way Shea played this year, he certainly did. I mean, I would have said the same thing about Embiid last year, but now Embiid's a giant question mark. Where, like, again, you don't have to have done it. So I'm not just being like a gatekeeper. But, like, if you're one of those dudes who could bona fide MVP candidate, year in, year out. There's a level of toughness to you where LeBron, I mean, Steph Curry is still on that list. There's a level of toughness and that you've proven it that is just different. And it shows in those big moments. Like, could he and some collection of players worse? Like, I don't know. Who's a better player, Jimmy Butler or Jalen Brunson?
I'm going to lean Jimmy. But at the same token, I should be leaning Jalen, maybe.
I think at this point, Jalen. Like, if you flip-flopped Jalen Brunson and Stephen Curry, and obviously not prime Steph Curry, this Jalen Brunson and 37-year-old Stephen Curry, how much worse are the Warriors? Now, that's not really fair because Steph has helped establish what the Warriors are and you wouldn't lose the culture and all the things. And Steph is so unique as an offensive force. Like, they're probably worse. But if you tell me that Jimmy got traded to the Knicks and it's like Jimmy, Mikal Bridges, you know, what, Cat and Jalen Brunson somehow, and the numbers fit monetarily, that team could win a championship, fine. Maybe. But he's, as a playoff piece, so freaking talented, good, impactful, important. And I think the thing that's also really impressive, you know, J.J. Redick talked about after the Lakers loss, the first thing we have to do is get in championship shape. Jalen Brunson is in championship shape. And that is physically, like, the load he carries. And maybe because of my fitness stuff, I'm just acutely aware of this. But I think the average fan takes for granted how fit you have to be to do what these guys do. And it's not just a physical load that, like, translates to, could you run a fast 5K or 10K or, like, I don't know, complete some obstacle course. It's not just the physical nature of it. The decision-making fatigue that your central nervous system goes through over the course of a game is real. And your fine motor skills, the ability to repeat your shooting motion, the ability to do those things without... This is why guys make big mistakes late. Is they just, like, you've just done so much that you basically lose the ability to function at a prime level. It's not weakness. It's not being soft. Like, at some point, it's physical. It's chemical. It's physiology. And this mamma jamma played an entire season under Tom Thibodeau and has played multiple seasons under Tom Thibodeau, which is a grind. And in a decisive game, he played 42 minutes, took 33 shots, and still had it in him at the end. That is rare. It's also gross. Like, that is what I hope people appreciate about how special it is that what he's doing. And you see the toll it takes on a guy like Cade Cunningham. Cade Cunningham's an incredible basketball player. Next 5 years, I'll take Kenny Cunningham over any player in that series, with all due respect to Brunson. Like, Cade might be one of them six. He's that good. He was 0 of 8 from 3 yesterday in 44 minutes. 0 of 8. He's never been under that kind of pressure before, and the grandiose nature of the series, I think, wore him down. And Brunson's just like, all right, one more shot. Asar Thompson, to the floor you go, sir. Bucket.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been in those moments before, like, game on the line. And that's one of the things I love about Jalen Brunson as a person. Like, he's just a winner, dog. Like, he knows what it takes. He's not scared of the big moment. And, I mean, they have a tall task against the Celtics. But what they did this series against the Pistons, this is one of my favorite series to watch, just because it was just tooth and nail the entire time. Like, the Pistons were going to run, the Knicks would respond, and it's just like, dang, like, you really wouldn't know the outcome of the game until, like, the last 30 seconds of most of those games except game one. So, I think the Pistons will be back. Just wait. They'll be back.
I think they will be, too. I think they're set up fantastically. Please, yeah. Detroit, don't do anything silly this offseason. Just keep on doing what you're doing, building on Cunningham, Durin. You know, they'll get, what's his name? The other guard.
J.B. Bickerstaff?
No, J.B. Bickerstaff is awesome. Like, he's a really good coach. The other guard who got hurt, kid from Notre Dame.
Oh, Jaden Ivey.
Yeah, I was like, why do I want to say? It's Neil's kid. Neil Ivey. The coach at Notre Dame women's, her son, Jaden, is, he's nasty. So they can get him back. That'll add to their arsenal next season. All right, when we get back here on the Hoffman Show, we're going to set up a question we're going to answer with you on the phones at 4:30. 301-230-0980 will be where you call in to answer a question that we're going to talk to you about next when it comes to the Commanders and whether or not everyone's making the same mistake they did last year.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Are the experts making the same mistake as last year when it comes to the Commanders? Are fans making the same mistake as last year when it comes to the Commanders? 301-230-0980 is where you're going to leave your answer once I explain to you what in the world we're talking about. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Craig Hoffman, of course, the host of the show. That's Anthony Haney, the super producer of the program. I should nod my head for those watching on YouTube that way because we switched the boxes back. So we're opposite because Anthony's there. So, Anthony, let me know if this sounds familiar. There is a position group on the Washington Commanders that fans, experts alike, think is a real problem for the team. That there's no way they couldn't possibly address it with a high round pick in the draft. That the current players are just not good enough to get it done. That this is an essential part of football, and if Washington thinks that what they have in-house and what they did in free agency is good enough to get the job done, then they are lying to themselves. Sound familiar?
A little bit.
What position do you think I'm talking about from 2025?
2025 or 2024?
25.
D-line.
And it sounds exactly like what in 24?
Offensive line.
Correct. Now, what if I told you, 30 for 30 coming this August from Ashburn? How'd I say it like that?
30 for 30?
Yeah. Remember that was the thing? What if I told you? That was the old 30 for 30 ads.
Uh-huh.
Okay, just making sure you remember that you're not actually, like, I was like, please don't tell me you're that young. Anyway, the point is, what if I told you that the Commanders got by last year by changing what they were doing schematically, supporting the group in question with ancillary pieces around, including some high draft pick investments, and ensuring that game flow did not put them in position to be exposed, and the opportunities were more in line with what they wanted them to be for winning football than the year prior. Because that's kind of what happened. Now, there's no more important piece to the success of the offensive line in 2024 than Jaden Daniels. Let's be real about that. There's a lot that Cliff Kingsbury did schematically. And that actually is probably a close second to just Jaden gets the ball out extremely quickly. Jaden also makes some pressures disappear. Maybe not even pressures. He makes some sacks disappear because he was able to run. But they were... The mistake that I think people are making is thinking that this Commanders team is dead in the water with the defensive line that they have this year. And I think that is fundamentally incorrect because they clearly weren't dead in the water last year. And I think they're better in 2025 than they were in 24. Not the D-line to last year's O-line. The 2025 defensive line, I think, is better than 2024. They're missing two key pieces. And one, I don't think is a huge loss. And it's not meant to insult the player. That one's John Allen. I don't think Allen is a huge loss because they played worse with him last year than without him. And while some of that has to do with injury and not acclimating to the system early and then them playing better once he was out, and then he was okay when he came back for sure, he just didn't play a lot last year. He missed, what, 12 games or something like that? So to pretend like, oh, how will they survive without John Allen when they survived last year without John Allen seems like a bit of a silly question to ask. Now, the other one is Dante Fowler. And yeah, his 11 sacks or 11 and a half sacks, whatever it was, 10 and a half, the interception he had against Carolina and some of the other plays he made, splash plays, they'll miss that. There's no doubt that they'll miss that. And I don't know that there's someone else on the roster that is capable of doing or of having that kind of production. I also think a huge portion of what the consternation about the Commanders' defensive line is they could not set an edge in the run game last year. And one of the biggest offenders of that was Dante Fowler, who was playing way more on first and second down than they initially wanted him to. And now you have Dietrich Wise, who's a much better first and second down player. Cleveland Furl is a backup instead of your starter as the edge, opposite of Dorrance Armstrong. You've got more beef inside with guys like Eddie Goldman. You have Javon Kinlaw, who's an interesting chess piece you can move around. And I just think that unit is better than the unit that they had last year. That's before you get to what they did behind them and guys like Amos and hopefully a better Marshawn Lattimore in year two. Certainly Lattimore better than what St. Juice and Forbes, and especially Forbes, gave you early last season. And I just think if you look at it solely through the lens of isolated talent, there's definitely a lot more to be desired. And I'm not going to pretend like they're excellent. But I do think that they're going to be able to make it work in a very similar way than they did the offensive line last year. And then hopefully next year, they're able to get the, you know, whatever the equivalent of Laremy Tunsil is, that is the premier pass rusher for them for whatever the rest of Jaden's rookie contract is, if not beyond.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think a lot of people wanted a splash play or, you know, for us to take a young defensive lineman. Something just to, I guess, liven up what we already have. Like, what we brought in Dietrich Wise, okay, like, he's a solid, you know, first and down player. But I think a lot of people are looking for names. And it's just more so, like, we just looking for productivity, something that we can, you know, move off of. And again, yeah, setting the edge in the run game, huge problem for us last year. And then also we were sort of kind of small. So I think what they did now in terms of just getting bigger guys, guys that we can have to compete against the people in our division, I think is totally acceptable. And to be honest, we just got to trust the coaching staff because, again, last year, even though we were small, they did a great job of trying to scheme up pressure and things of that nature. And most of the time, we would get there and not make the sacks. And you can take a look at the Bucs week one game. So many times we got so close to Baker Mayfield, John Allen missed a sack. Deron Payne missed a sack. And guess who's taking off? Baker Mayfield. Or the coverage wasn't holding up and things of that nature. And I think they did things in the draft that would address, you know, our coverage and then also addressing the run game as well.
So are we making the same mistake, or whoever is having this level of criticism, whether you want to say it's pundits, whether you want to say it's fans, because there's some of both, and there were definitely some of both last year, but is the collective group of haters making the same mistake as last year? 301-230-0980 is the phone number. 301-230-0980. We take your calls next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We are always live. As well on the free Odyssey app, we are streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. And we are taking your calls at 301-230-0980, where you are going to tell us whether you think the Commanders are making the same mistake as last year when it comes to the offensive line in 2024 and everything everyone said about that and the defensive line in 2025. And look, when you talk about the offensive line in 2024, I kind of understood more the level of consternation because you're talking about a rookie quarterback. You're talking about, oh my God, you have to protect him. They're going to get Jaden killed. You know, one of the things that was a question for Daniels, I think, coming out of school was his sack to pressure ratio was pretty high. So if he was going to take on a lot of pressure, statistically speaking, he was in danger of taking a lot of sacks. He did a lot better with that number in 2025 than I think a lot of people anticipated. But also, if you watch the tape, I think you understood a little bit more on some of the sack numbers in college. And there was a lot of folks that said, I know historically this number is concerning, but I actually don't know if it's going to apply to Daniels. And it certainly didn't in year one. So I understand that level of consternation. I think when you look at the sack numbers and the ability to get pressure for Washington in 2025, you have to look at how the improvements they did make to the defensive line and the improvements they made in the secondary are going to affect the opportunities. And last year, there just wasn't a lot of opportunities for guys to pin their ears back and rush because they would give up 6 yards on first down run or, hey, we got to stop on first down. Oh, there it goes on second down, and now it's third and four. Now you're like, okay, we gotta blitz the high heavens to get pressure because it's got to get there now. Otherwise, receivers are going to have a chance to get open down the field. And this year, you know, when it's third and 10, you can drop guys back into coverage, know that it's going to take time for the receivers to get down the field, and then your four-person pass rush, whether that be, you know, 4D linemen or, you know, Luvu or whoever, now you can start to cook a little bit. I think the other thing is you have a lot more versatility up front this year where you can throw different body types. And while there's no individual rusher as good as, say, Dante Fowler was, Jacob Martin is a similar body type. We'll see if he winds up making the team. But he's kind of the professional pass rusher who hopefully is never playing on first and second down with any regularity. We'll see what Javonte Jean-Baptiste is in year two. Dietrich Wise has never had a season where he's had less than 5 sacks, I think is the number. You have Javon Kinlaw, who is an elephant end, is a very interesting player and provides you serious pass rush juice inside. I think, you know, Anthony, if I was going to pick someone who I think is probably being overlooked by fans, watch what Johnny Newton does in year two. This guy's a second round pick that was only a second round pick because he had serious questions about his feet. And the injuries pushed him down out of the first round. Adam Peters, and I know this has kind of become Adam's thing, where he just like in 2 years can't believe the players he's getting in the first and second round. You know, obviously, you could believe last year because Jaden's there after Caleb at two. But he kind of couldn't believe that Johnny Newton was still there for him at 35 to take. That's a guy that if they had picked up another first round pick somehow in the teens, they would have considered taking Johnny Newton. That's how much they like the player. And he's there for them at 35. They're psyched. They take him. He misses basically the entire offseason because of the foot. He's slow into camp. He's slow getting integrated. I think he even missed a game to start the season, and then he gets going. Now he's got a full offseason. He's got a season under his belt of experience and then the offseason work. Watch what he does in year two. Because if he takes a jump and he becomes a premier interior pass rusher, now we're cooking. We're also getting Anthony inside contract year Daron Payne. Because he either is going to be a lot better this year and stick around or pick up a big chunk of change in the offseason, or he's going to be another meh player and maybe he'll get a Jonathan Allen sized chunk of change somewhere. Big number that looks big, but it guaranteed money. I mean, guaranteed money that certainly you and I would take, but not big time NFL interior lineman pass rush, you know, juice money. But like, if you're Daron Payne, do you want to get John Allen money or do you want to go try to get like Milton Williams money? And I don't know he's going to get Williams money because he'll be, I think, 29 going into next offseason and Williams was 25. But like, those interior guys, I think, should not be overlooked in this equation. And that's before we even talk about what Wagner and Luvu can do as blitzers, what Mikey can do if he's now kicked inside as a blitzer, and the other guys on the back end, guys like Quan Martin. One, what those guys affect in coverage, but two, what they can do themselves as blitzers. So are they going to have a 10-sack player? Probably not, but I don't think that means they're going to have an ineffective pass rush for 17 games, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I feel like also us sort of kind of not getting a pass rusher in the draft or even free agency so far, I think it just suggests that Adam Peters and company, they like what they have in the building already. And I don't think people fully understand that. The moves that they've made so far, like even in the draft, like I think the getting Josh Connelly, Trey Amos, those were value picks. And I feel as though like what if you compliment what we did in the draft and then also what we've already done in free agency, I think Adam Peters is content with what we have in our building so far. And we still, you know, if need be, have some cap space. I think about $24 million in cap. That's if we need to make a move. But I think Adam Peters and crew, they're comfortable where they are.
For sure. And it is worth pointing out, like, there's been a lot of people connecting the dots of Washington and Za'Darius Smith. And I would not be surprised if that happened. I also would not be surprised if that doesn't happen till August. Because if you're Za'Darius Smith and you're at this point in your career, do you want to have to go through OTAs? Do you want to have to go, like, the first couple, if you can miss a couple days of camp? Like, or, you know, it also keeps your options open in case someone gets desperate. Like, right now, Za'Darius Smith, you know, maybe you could get $10, $12 million from Washington, maybe more, I don't know. But he's not getting, like, Khalil Mack money, that's for sure. What happens if a team gets desperate? What happens if someone goes down an injury and all of a sudden they're like, shoot, all right, we need you, like, we'll pay you $15. So I think that that is worth mentioning as well, that there are a couple of guys available and they can still add to the room. I think it tells you, though, you're correct. They like what they have, but more specifically, they like what they have more than they liked what was on the market. And that's in the draft. You know, they like what they have plus Josh Connerly compared to they like, you know, what they have plus Donovan Nzorocku. And the same thing for the free agent class. And I would say the other part of this is Logan said this on Take Command, and I was like, it's a stretch, but it's also not wrong. Josh Connerly helps your pass rush. Like, if your offense is an absolute juggernaut and other teams are then having to drop back, and I'll use Logan's exact language. As an offensive coordinator, you are trying to limit the number of true drop back passes in a game. Based off situation, can you get play action? Can you get rollouts? Obviously, you know, situationally, if you're up, you're running the football more. If you're not in bad down and distance, those play action fakes hold a lot more weight. Even on third down, if it's third and four and I run a play action fake, you might bite on that and slows your pass rush down a half a step versus if it's third and eight, all you're doing is wasting time. I'm pinning my ears back. I'm not falling for that fake. So those true dropbacks you're trying to limit. And one of the ways you do that is being great on offense, making the other team feel like they have to drop back and pass all the time, that they have to abandon the run game. And so in that way, yes, is Josh Connerly going to help create as many sacks as, say, Donovan Nzorocku was? No. But you don't win a football game by getting pure number of sacks. Like, you got to do what you think is best for the football team as a whole. And on that way, I think they've done a lot of good stuff that will help them situationally, making the offense more stable. And then some of the pieces they have added that can help the defense be better overall, even if, yes, I still think going into the 2026 offseason, pretty much no matter what happens in 2025, getting a premier pass rusher will be on their to-do list. They just don't have the ability to get one right now because there wasn't one available for them when they were on the clock. And there weren't any available on the market. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And when we get back, an absolute legend of sports and of the NBA is stepping aside. That and a couple of other news stories that we look at. This, that, and the other thing, including our homage to Greg Popovich next on the Hoffman Show. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube, which is popping today, at the Team 980. Coming up at 5 o'clock, you have heard maybe a couple of clips throughout the week from the various stakeholders, mayor, council members, etc., when it comes to the Commander's pursuit of RFK. We've put together a very special edition of Not My Beat today. I'm going to play the role of the person who is there, but we're going to bring to you all the different things that everyone has said, from Phil Mendelson today on Sheehan's show to Mayor Bowser calling into Grant and Danny. We've been fortunate on the stations to have a lot of folks chiming in, and we're going to let you hear what they said so you feel like you are caught up and know the state of play going into this first weekend after the announcement. Of course, we got a bunch of weeks here where we're just going to be following the negotiations, following the story. And the next big shoe to drop is when the mayor's budget ultimately comes in, which hopefully is going to be next week for the council to look at. One of the decisions they'll have to make is whether to strip this out of the budget for a separate vote, or is this going to be voted on as a larger part of the DC fiscal year 2026 budget. So we'll get into all of that coming up at 5 o'clock. Right now, though, it is time, Anthony, for another episode of This, That, or the Other Thing. And I don't know whether we're going to get to three stories today. We typically try to, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But I want to make sure that this gets it to do. Greg Popovich is stepping aside. He, at 76 years old, has had stroke and some ensuing health issues over the past couple of months, going back to the middle of the season. And I just hate this so much for Pop that he doesn't necessarily get to go out on his own terms. He is he was excited to continue to coach Wemby. Duh. Took over in the early 90s, had the David Robinson era, had the Duncan and Robinson era, had the Duncan Parker Ginobili era. And the Spurs have torn it down the last couple of years, and he has continued to coach them through that. And then he was rewarded for his patience by getting Victor Wembanyama in the draft. And he will still, I think, be an enormous part of Wemby's career moving forward. But Greg Popovich is one of a kind. And so rarely is it on display the quality of man that a coach is, especially. We just get to see it in spades on top of the obvious tactician and, thinker on the basketball level that he is. But from his willingness to speak out on social issues and just put himself out there and I'll be damned the consequences and like, go ahead and come for me. I served in the U.S. military. He was an Air Force pilot, went to the Air Force Academy. He has that background and I feel like that gives him some standing. And not necessarily standing. We're all American. You know, all of us that are American citizens or, you know, people that live in this country, like we have a right to speak up. Like that is literally what the First Amendment says. But having the right and having it actually land with people and having them listen, Pop knows that his voice hits different. And especially in Texas and considering some of the issues that he has spoken up on, specifically gun violence. And I admire the hell out of him for that, his willingness to say, this is what I think, this is why I think this thing, and I'll be damned the consequences. So there's that. There is the familial nature that he has created within that organization. And I feel like so often, like, oh, our job, it's like a family. And like, that is, jobs are not family. And I think there's real risk actually in trying to say, oh, your work is your family. But that doesn't mean that you can't treat people extraordinarily well while also understanding the business. Pop has had to have tough conversations about trading players and cutting players. But good luck finding someone with a bad thing to say about how they were treated when they were there. The way that he builds a team with those famous team dinners and they're all on him with the best wine you can find. I mean, just... Yeah, I did find the sideline interview thing annoying, but I also understood that he was doing it because he thought they were stupid, and I agree with him that those sideline interviews in between quarters are stupid. It was never personal with those reporters. But, man, like, just what a career, what a life. And I hope that this new role suits him and he's able to enjoy it, enjoy it and enjoy the team that he has helped build and enjoy the culture that will continue to make the Spurs successful, I think, as long as Wembanyama's there. Obviously, his talent is going to be. But I think Wemby is the perfect person to carry on that legacy of Pop. And on the day that he announces that he's stepping down, man, just ultimate salute, hat tip, round of applause, bravo to the Basketball Hall of Famer, Greg Popovich.
Yeah, and I think you did a great job, of capturing, like, who he was. As a guy, also just as a coach. And I will more so just want to add on to him as, sort of kind of opposition, like how he treated the opposition. Like he was sometimes funny. Sometimes he was like super genuine. I remember Dirk's last shot. Like he was telling everybody, get out the way, let Dirk get his last shot attempt ever up in his life. And, Dirk ended up making the shot and he's on the sideline like clapping like, because, again, he knows what Dirk meant to the NBA for 20 years. Or, something as simple as fouling Shaq as soon as the game tips off and like thumbs up and shot. Like it's just like
that was funny. I remember
this
that.
Is pop. So it's just like we're
really
gonna miss
funny, dude.
We're gonna miss some of that, man.
Yeah, I think Richard Jefferson told a story on NBA Today earlier that was like that is a perfect encapsulation of Pop.
Yeah.
They get down 1-0 in a playoff series. And, of course, RJ played for Pop. I think it was like 09 to 2012. Like, he was on some of those Spurs teams then. And RJ goes, you know, he'd come in the meeting and just be like, all right, we're down 1-0. But, like, whatever. There are kids in war-torn countries that are, you know, that's hard. People fighting poverty. People that are hungry. That's hard. We're going to figure out this basketball thing. And that's not to say that, like, it didn't matter. It's not to say, like, who cares? It's just like, hey, let's be grateful for what we get to do. And now let's put in the work to do it right. And that's a really fine line because you want to, like, allow people to feel those moments of pressure, those moments of strife. Like, those, just because other people have it worse doesn't mean in life or in sports that your troubles aren't real. But the perspective can be helpful and it can be a thing that, like, kind of pulls you out and allows you to reset your focus. And so when I think of Pop in general, the word that I think of that also jives with exactly what you were just saying is perspective. Like, Greg Popovich was someone who had perspective. And he realized that if I'm playing Dirk in one of his final games, the moment that Dirk is having is far more important than the result of this regular season game. That a foul is worth giving because that foul is less significant than the moment that we will create by making Shaq and everybody in the arena laugh and everybody watching on TV laugh because we're doing Hack a Shaq again. It doesn't make him any less fierce of a competitor. Doesn't make him any less as a coach. Like, it's just he's a man who enjoyed his job, realized how lucky he was to do it, and ultimately had the perspective of someone who understood his place in the world, used that place in the world to try to make it a better place, and should be saluted for that. And if the world was filled with more Greg Popoviches, I just think the world would be a better place for everyone except for sideline reporters. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. You like that landing, huh?
That was good. That was good.
That's a line that if I was writing something on Pop, I would have wrote that one. That was top of the dome.
That was smooth.
Got some skills. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. When we get back, RFK Stadium, that is the site where the Commanders hope to build a new stadium. City Council is the last hurdle. What are City Council members saying about it? What is the mayor saying about it? This week, the answer is a lot. We're going to get you caught up with everything you need to hear from DC City Council Chair Phil Mendelson, committee members that are council members that are currently yeses, council members that are currently no, some that are undecided, plus Mayor Bowser, who called in yesterday to Grant and Danny. We'll get you caught up in a very special remixed edition of Not My Beat next.